fifth case for argument this morning is Barr v. Western Illinois University.
Good morning.
Mr. Baker.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is James Baker. I am appearing this morning on behalf of Lisa Barr. This case arises out of a decision of the district court granting Western Illinois University motion for judgment on the pleadings based upon the doctrine of res judicata. The issue, as I see it in this case, is whether the relevant pertinent facts in the first case Mrs. Barr could bring, which I'll refer to as Barr 1.
Mr. Baker, I'm a nosy sort of person. Your brief says that your client was an assistant professor, and that's what the university's brief says. An assistant professor of what?
Journalism.
Journalism. And this case ends up being resolved because she couldn't tell a story straight in her first complaint.
I think the case arises because of confusion on her part in the complaint she filed with the district court in the first case. And there are two parts of the complaint I think come into play. The first part, and I will concede, is that when Dr. Barr was asked in the narrative to describe her claim, she did refer to the actions of the university in December of 2009 terminating her employment. In another part of the complaint, I think in the preamble to the complaint, she was asked to identify the charge which relates to her claim. And in that, she alluded to the charge she filed, I believe, on November 18 or 19, 2009, which related to various acts of discrimination or harassment she claims occurred between 2007 and 2009. Now, there's no mistake with the proposition that she did assert in her complaint the non-retention issue. But I think the significant point is that when she filed her complaint, the only thing that she could properly raise in the complaint were the acts of harassment and retaliation, which were the body of her first charge.
Well, what she raised in the complaint was the non-retention.
I agree, and I don't think
she
could have done that.
That's what she raised in the second complaint.
That's correct.
Your argument seems to be that principles of preclusion don't apply when there's a new legal theory in the second complaint, allowed by a second or perhaps even a first EEOC right to sue letter. And my question to you is whether that contention is consistent with Herman against CENCOM Cable Associates.
Actually, we're not contending that there was a change in the legal theory. Our contention is that when she filed her first complaint, she could not have alleged properly the claims relating to her termination.
Yes, but she did allege them. The question I ask is whether your current theory on appeal is consistent with our decision in Herman against CENCOM Cable Associates.
I am not familiar with that case, Your Honor.
Well, the case that I would be inclined to say is on all fours with this and dispositively against you, which gives you something of a problem.
I'm not familiar with the facts in that case, Your Honor, but in this case our position essentially is that when she filed her complaint, the only claim she could have maintained were those that were in her
that
charge.
That was true in Herman 2. That was the plaintiff's argument in Herman. It was rejected by this court. That decision came down in 1993. It's not as if it would be really hard to find.
I apologize, and I'm not familiar with that case, Your Honor.
Well, we've also got lots more very recent precedents that basically hold
yes.
the same thing, that you can't get around res judicata. There's
Herman Adams, all by itself.
Right, Adams, Anchor Glass, Sarnecki, Palka, Hayes.
Your Honor, my understanding...
You can't split your claims and blame it on, you know, not having a right to sue letter yet.
Excuse me, I interrupted you. My understanding in those cases...
Oh, by the way, your opponent's brief cites Herman. Why didn't you go read it? Anyway, go back to it.
If I can address Judge Sykes' question. My understanding is in the cases that that Judge Sykes referred to were all cases where in both complaints there were identical facts alleged. There was no question about the entitlement of the plaintiff in that case to raise those facts. She just changed the theory of her case. Here we're contending that in this case the plaintiff, Ms. Barr, at the time she filed her first case, could not have raised any issue concerning her discharge because it had not been presented to the EEOC, which is a condition for initiating a lawsuit. That's our position.
Yeah, that position was rejected in Herman. What I don't understand, for what it's worth, about this case is why your client, who by the time the first case was dismissed, didn't ask for reconsideration or rehearing, or move to join the two complaints, to consolidate them. The district court's order dismissing the first complaint was transparently erroneous. We have said, repeatedly, that a case that's dismissed for failing to serve process should be dismissed without prejudice. The district judge dismissed it with prejudice. So either a Rule 59 motion or an appeal would have fixed that, and then the second suit could have proceeded. Right? Barr was represented by counsel at the time the first suit was dismissed. Why was there no Rule 59 motion or appeal?
I have an explanation for that, but it's not in the record.
Oh, well, if it's not a record, then it's not.
Do you want me to respond to your question?
No, it's not a record.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Baker. Ms. Wickern.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Nadine Wickern, Assistant Attorney General on behalf of the University. I think the Court has a good picture of what the issue is in this case. Simply because Ms. Barr filed a charge relating to harassment and the changes in the terms and conditions of her employment is irrelevant because she did not include those allegations in the complaint in Bar 1. The allegations in the complaint in Bar 1 and Bar 2 both...
Did the board ask the district judge to dismiss the first suit with prejudice?
No, because they had not been served.
Oh, that's right. Without, well, you can file without being served, but
right.
Yeah, okay. So the district judge just spontaneously erred,
a magistrate judge,
called this to the judge's attention.
Correct.
Okay.
And unless the court has any other questions, I'll stand my brief and ask that you affirm the judgment below. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Anything further, Mr. Baker? Well, thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.